2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to the 90th Percentile. It's your host, Jeff Ponce. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Matt Pajak. Today, we are getting into a concept that we discussed a little bit last week, which is the exposure funnel. We're going to discuss that in greater detail today, and we brought a guest on to join us. That is a good friend of mine, Brian Sikowski. He's a national cross-checker for Perfect Game USA. He's the director of their draft and JUCO coverage as well. Also, co-host Cold Weather Bats, a podcast that covers Michigan high school baseball. Welcome to the show, Brian. How are you, man?
Thanks, brother. Good, man. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here with you and Matt. Big fan of the show. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, Jeff and a couple of Polish guys.
There we Damn go. Right.
Polish and a couple of Polacks. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. And you can't say that.
You can't.
Yeah. Watch your mouth, bro.
Derogatory. Don't come to Ham. Don't. We'll have to stay hard, I suppose.
Don't come to Hamtramck with that energy. Yeah. I
don't. Yeah. Yeah, Jeff, you know, the famous put him on the hot seat question.
Yes.
Subway, James Jonathan's, Jersey Michaels, Capriati's, 2-8 scale, rank them, grade them.
Oh, geez. Subway's a 3 because I don't think it's a 2 because it is kind of mostly edible. So, like, that's – and sometimes on the trail, man, you're in – the only place that's open at midnight is the truck stop Subway. So, like, that's dinner, and it's got to be at least a 3. So, rolling with that. Jimmy John's is a 4. I have them ahead of Subway, but I still don't think it's great. Number 9 with hot peppers. And the – Mike, man, it's like a 55. I think it's an above average sandwich if you do it right, but I don't lose my mind over it. DeBellis is the 7. I don't know how regional that is. I know there's it's in Michigan and Ohio, but DeBellis is the goat for me in terms of the sandwich. I don't know if I've had Capriati's. The best sub I've ever had was on was in Atlantic City, New Jersey, actually. I don't remember the name of it, but oh my God, like White House Subs or something. Like that, it was unbelievable. That's number 1.
Firehouse,
but yeah, what did I miss? Any others? Firehouse, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
There we go.
Yeah, I tried.
Like, I'm a sandwich guy, man. Like, I want it, you know, like it's, I want to like a good, like, I'm a sandwich guy, bro. I have a tough grade scale for sandwiches, so you know,
that's pretty high praise for Jersey Michaels coming in at 55. I mean, I've got them at like 45. But, like, I've got them in the same order that you got them, right? My Subway is, like, a 20, I think. Jimmy John's is, like, a 30 for me. Capriati's, though. Find yourself a Capriati's.
I need to get some Capriati's, what you're saying. Okay, fair enough.
You need to get some Capriati's in your life. Capriati's listens to every podcast. No, they don't.
We've been trying to get a sponsorship. Yeah. Oh, we've been trying hard to get a sponsorship from Capriati's, but they've just not been biting on this.
They won't even like a tweet.
Yeah,
we put out specific Capriati's content
with on videos. Twitter,
no one will like it with videos,
multimedia like Capriati's content, and just nothing.
Just retweet
it. What happens when you have time. Boomer social media directors? If that guy was, if whoever was running their social media was our age, he'd be all over that. So
yeah.
That, I think that tells you that it's of a different generation.
I like that you think I'm your age. Anyway.
Wait, I'm just being nice. Yeah.
We're all in the same ballpark-ish.
Yeah, sure.
Roughly. Yeah.
exposure funnel, Jeff.
Yes. That's what we want to get into. So
we were going to talk about that. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I mentioned it off the rip. We're going to be talking a little bit about sort of how – there's certain forces, people within the cycle of players progressing from the low levels of amateur ball, you know, beginnings of travel ball, all the way up to the college game and the professional level, and you know, sort of how certain people get a certain amount of exposure for certain reasons, certain players. Mm-hmm. whether that's good or bad, you can decide, but it's not, it's conflicting with the long-term development goals of players often. And the skills and tools that are evident in players that maybe don't necessarily help you win ball games in the interim. Matt, jump in here, because I know this is your baby and a concept that I think you can articulate as well as anyone.
Yeah, I love that it's got a name, the exposure funnel. Just got to keep drilling the exposure funnel. If you keep hearing exposure funnel, then you're never going to forget it.
We all have to get twos.
Yeah. So the whole idea here is that you can't like a player unless you've seen a player, right? And when I was at USA Baseball for a handful of years, 4 or 5 years from 2016 to 2020, I was able to kind of get like a close-up look at the identification process for the national team. And, you know, you see like the 12 of you guys, and if 12 of you guys go win gold, then like those names become famous and the identification events moving forward. So it's a little bit of an inside track. You go to future identification events and your name is starred before the event starts because, oh, this is a guy who's helped us win gold. So not saying that's right, wrong, whatever, but that kind of like plays into bias, which we all have, right? We like what we've seen perform in the form of a player. Now, where that gets tricky is that what wins at 12 years old isn't necessarily what wins at 15, isn't necessarily what wins at 18, and isn't necessarily what wins at the professional level, right? So with that in mind, if you fall in love with a player who performed at 12, there's a chance that they're not the same guy at 15 or later on down the road, 18 or professional, right? And it's not just a chance. It's a pretty high chance. There's actually a lot of science out there. People have gone in and they've done research studies on like other sports as well. Early success in a sport not being correlated to late success in a sport. Right. So understanding how the body develops and understanding, you know, that everyone develops at a different rate and having, I mean, the three of us have all seen it, 12U, 13U, 14U baseball. Just get the biggest kid on the field and he's going to mash and that's what you need. Right. The problem is that that same kid doesn't continue to grow and then a bunch of kids grow past him and then they get surpassed. So anyway, the point being of the exposure funnel is that at some point early on in a player's career, they are selected for a travel organization or, yeah, most likely a travel organization. Let's call that like the 8U, 12U window, right? And they're being selected by a coach that probably doesn't have any kind of credentials to evaluate and decide on an 8U, 9U, 10U player, right? But those are the kids when they make those travel teams that play in the tournaments. And when they play in the tournaments and they perform, they get put in front of people making decisions on them for the right now, to win games right now. And once someone likes you at 11 or 12, that puts you ahead of the kid who hasn't been seen, who may be good elsewhere. And then that kind of sticks with you all the way up. So the thing here is like, when do you enter the exposure funnel? And if you get into the exposure funnel early and you perform for people, then there becomes this group bias towards like, hey, this guy always hits, this guy always plays. And then that guy kind of gets the inside track for opportunities as he gets older, right? He's the one that all the agents are crawling all over. He's the one that the college recruiters are all over when he gets to 15, 16 years old. And then really at the top of the talent exposure funnel is the professional scouting community, and they're the only ones that are evaluating for a player, not right now, not to win right now, but you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, right? So they're looking at these players that have now become famous and now are ranked really high, third party sites, you know, they've been on USA national teams, and they're looking at it kind of like with fresh eyes and being like, okay, well, we're interested in this guy. We're not interested in this guy. And there's dozens and dozens of guys every single summer that hit the circuit, and the pro scouting community doesn't have any interest in them, but they're highly ranked and they've played on national teams and all that. So that's the gist of this concept of the exposure funnel.
Over 60% of Americans believe that the most useful second language in the U.S. is Spanish. In my scientific survey of people in baseball, I would put that number at somewhere around 99%. Spanish is spoken in every clubhouse in the U.S. at the minor and major league level. And if you want to take some time this fall to brush up on what you didn't learn in high school, no problemo, because with Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. You can start speaking a new language with Babbel. Why Babbel? Because it works. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or fooling yourself with language apps that are a little more than games, Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you speak a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations. All of Babbel's tips and tools for learning a new language are approachable, accessible, and rooted in real-life situations. They delivered with conversation-based teaching. Here's what I love about Babbel. It isn't learning from a book. It presents different ways for you to cover the same material so you learn. You hear the words. You read the words. You speak the words. And then Babbel tells you if you're speaking them properly. And it all begins to click. Comprende? Studies from Yale, Michigan State, and others prove that Babbel is better. For instance, one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester of college. With over 10 million subscriptions sold, Babbel's real language learning for real conversations. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off of your Babbel subscription, but only for Baseball America listeners. Go to babbel.com/BA. That's 55% off of a Babbel subscription, babbel.com/BA. That's BABBEL.com/BA. Rules and restrictions apply.
Looking for tickets to your next game, concert, or show? Make shopping for tickets more convenient with TickPick, the original no-fee ticket marketplace that brings you the best prices for all the events that you love. And now TickPick is partnering with Zip, so you can shop now and pay later. Zip allows you to shop at TickPick and split your payment into easy installments. Visit TickPick.com or install TickPick on the App Store and use promo code ZIP20, that's ZIP20, for $20 off your first purchase of $199 or more with Zip. Zip can only be used for U.S. purchases, and Zip may charge a fee at checkout. Certain merchant product goods and service restrictions apply. Visit Zip's terms of service at www.zip.co-us. Loans through the Zip app were originated through WebBank, except for Zip-originated loans in Colorado, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maryland. Check out with Zip at TickPick.com.
Yeah, so we've got Brian Sikowski on here, and he's been around amateur baseball for quite some time. He has a role as, an evaluator for Perfect Game. I've got a role as someone who talks about amateur players. Jeff has a role as someone who talks about amateur players. And we're all involved in this thing in some capacity because there's all, we all have players that we like, and we all have players that we haven't seen. Which doesn't even give us a chance to like those players. So, Brian, you want to just kind of talk about kind of the world that you've seen and how it's evolved and kind of how you've been involved in that over the past couple of years?
Yeah. To start, I couldn't agree more with your concept of an exposure funnel and then your explanation of it. For me in particular, I'm very rarely, if ever, there at the beginning. I don't watch 8 to 12 U baseball. I never have. Back in the early days, my early days of Perfect Game, I would have told you that I'd included 14 U in my purview, but that was when we had like three total scouts, So now it's more, I really don't see guys until they're 16. And a lot of times I don't see guys until they're 17. But there's like an annual little revival in the PD scouting group chat where it's like, I enter a thought on a player, and Jeremy Brown, who sees players from the time they're 12, responds with, "Oh, you finally saw that guy, huh? Yeah, I liked him in 2017. Some stuff like that. But it's like, so I'm more, my role is ends up being more like you described with the pro guys. It's like, I'm kind of waiting at the end. I'm kind of trying to go in with fresh eyes as much as I can on guys who are 16, 17, and like try and simulate that like first draft look as best I can. And that's not in any way discounting the history our scouts have with these players. I find that to be one of the more intensely valuable things that we do is having such a long track record with some guys. But there's always like a, hey, why is this guy famous? Or conversely, like, hey man, we nailed this one. you know, like sometimes the dude who's a dude stays a dude. It doesn't always happen, but you know,
right.
And like, so I like my role in that sense of like, I don't have to care at all who the best 10-year-old is. And I don't want to care, you know, but like, it's, the funnel is correct because they're the guys are, it's the same vibe as like the first rounder who always keeps getting more opportunities because he was the first rounder, you know, whether he sucks or not, he's getting that fourth chance in double A to prove himself. Whereas the dude who outperformed him was an undrafted free agent, his first sign of trouble, he's getting cut. Right. So right. It's kind of the same vibe where like, if, and like you said, if you make the 12U national team, or if you make the 12U select festival for us or whatever it is, like you are now a little more predisposed to us giving you opportunities, and the collective us, like meaning us as the industry, giving you more and more opportunities to kind of prove to us that you're not as good as we thought, as opposed to just like us taking you at your word that you're not very good. You know what I mean?
100%. And I think, like, you know, I've had a number of conversations with agents over the past month about this topic, right? And like, they're sitting there and they're trying to sift through it too. They're trying to figure out like, okay, 15U national team trials, 16U, 17U NTDP with USA Baseball, you know, like the same higher level events at the same age groups for perfect game. Like, okay, which of these guys should I actually be on? And which of these guys, and it's not, you know, it's not to say like, hey, all these guys can't go on to have, you know, successful careers in baseball, right? Like, you know, some of these guys are gonna be better college players, some of these guys can be pro guys out of high school, you know, whatever it may be. But the fact of the matter is that like going into last summer, and I think this is a great example because both these guys got drafted and paid pretty well, but there was some distance between them in the draft. Like Max Clark and Kevin McGonigal were both top 10 players in the class per rankings, right?
Yep.
And it was when they were seen with fresh eyes that it's like, okay, Max Clark has really intriguing tools to match his ability on the baseball field, which makes him a top five pick. Kevin McGonigal is an exceptional hitter, probably one of the best hitters in the class, and something that won at every level because he had such advanced bat to ball. That's why he was a top 10 player in the class per rankings going into that summer. Now you start looking at it through a lens of like, okay, what's this guy going to be 3 or 4 years down the road? And it's like, okay, he still needs to be that exceptional bat to ball guy, but his tools are going to be, his physical tools are going to be pretty average, you know, comparatively to that future subset of players. So one of them's a top five pick and the other one's a second rounder, right? But they were both top 10 in rankings going into that summer. So I think like that's really like, okay, well now you kind of like magnify that a little bit. And it's like, let's look at that list 2 years younger, you know, 15, 16 years old. And like, let's try and figure it out now. And now we don't have the opinions of the scouting community influencing our decisions on whether or not we should try and advise this guy or should we recruit him to our Power Five school. It's, you know, you're kind of like, hey, am I going to be the only one who doesn't think Kevin McGonigal is going to be an impact player when he's 19 or 20 years old when you're seeing him at 15? Or am I going to be like everybody else where it's like, of course, this guy is going to be an impact player. He's hit at every level. He's the best bat in the class, you know? So I think that's where it just everything gets really tricky. I think the dangerous part of this, and maybe you can speak to it a little bit, is like setting the expectation and what that does to the player mentally when they see themselves as a top 10 player. And then they get to that summer where people are looking at them with fresh eyes and projecting them for the future, and they don't see him as a top 10 player and what that can potentially do to the kid. So that's always something I've been very, I guess, conscious of. And it's not just limited to baseball. Again, this is like, this is every sport. Sure. You know?
To me, and you can, Matt, speak to this better than I could just in terms of like a physical development window. But like, to me, the two big jumps that I'm at least cognizant of, going from 13U to 14U is a massive leap because you have to start playing on a real field with real bats. And we find out quick if you're actually good or if you're actually, you know, projectable enough to be good. And then the other one is going from 16 to 17U because now way more people are watching you and way more people care. if you know what you do and how you look doing it and blah, 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 blah. And a lot of times, like, and there are examples every summer, and in 10 years, we can talk about the specific examples from this year. We're not going to do that live on air and air people out, but there are a number of players who were probably top 10, top 15 ranked coming into the summer who are not barely on draft boards now. And like that happens every single year. And the exact opposite happens. The dudes we've never heard of are going to be first rounders next year. What, you know what I mean? There's a direct correlation between the two or whatever. But I'm sure that that's horrible mentally, you know, on those players. Like you've been told you're so good for so long, and it's people you don't know telling you you're so good. And it's, you know, people like Perfect Game with a certain amount of credibility saying, hey man, you're a dude. And then all of a sudden everyone's 18 now, let's see what you look like. And maybe you're not quite in that tier anymore. I'm sure that's hell, you know, emotionally on a player. And you want to say like, well, who cares what a third party says? Who cares what anybody else says? No, it doesn't even matter what pro scouts say. Like, just be yourself, go play. But that's so much easier said than done, especially in the head of a 17-year-old kid. You know what I mean? So I'm sure that it's traumatic in a lot of ways. I'm sure that it's a not small amount of negatively impactful in some cases. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I can give you an example, and it's a football example. So it's a high school team that I worked with last fall, and their quarterback at the age of 15 was a top five pro style quarterback prospect in the entire country per some notable third party ranking. Okay. And he won a state championship. Yeah, you know, he's like 6'4", 6'5", left-handed, like can sling it, right? Won a state championship as a junior. And then he went and he did like the exposure thing where you got all the camps and you got all the, you know, the big QB camps and everything that summer. Walked away with no Power 5 offers. And he's like hanging his head, you know? And then he goes into that senior fall and they're supposed to be coming off of a state championship. And in week two, he gets benched for the guy who's a year younger than him. And he just kind of rides off the rest of the year into the sunset. Like he was a great teammate and the whole nine, but he didn't have any interest in going and playing. He really smart, really academic. He didn't have any interest in going and playing at an Ivy. He didn't have an interest in playing because he had this expectation in his head from when he was 15 that like it's big time Power 5 football or bust because I'm a top 5 player in the country. Right. So it's like, I kind of like saw it like firsthand, like, oh, this is really interesting how this kid's mindset is like, okay, well, if it's not this, then I don't want any of this. Realistically, if he was never ranked as a top five pro style quarterback at 15, then he might have been over the moon to get an opportunity to be an Ivy League quarterback.
Yeah.
And you just described a significant part of why the transfer portal exists too, in any sport. You know, we're not talking just baseball or football, but in any sport, the kid who I have to go D1 or bust. And if I can't tweet out that I'm committed to a D1 school, then what am I even doing? And then bam, portal, bam, like automatic portal. Anytime I see a kid include the words D1 in his commitment post, that kid's going to be in the portal eventually. But it speaks to the, like, you don't want to say delusions of grandeur because oftentimes it's not the kid's fault that he thinks he's good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that sort of like this or nothing mentality that they get, that pedestal they put themselves on or get put on, is nothing but a negative for the rest of their career a lot of times.
100%.
Let me jump in here too. Like, I think also like the cycle startings earlier and earlier, particularly in baseball, right? Like, I feel like we know players that are two cycles out now. It's a lot more prominent now where there's rankings for the 2024, 2025 draft, while the 2023 draft cycle is still closing. That's really common. And that's not just Perfect Game who, you know, was doing stuff like that early. Obviously it ties into all the events and stuff you guys are doing. We do it now. 4 or 5 years ago, you really weren't able to find draft rankings that went, you know, anything beyond like 15 or 20 names, right? There might be some famous names, your Brady Houses, those sort of guys. Now you can probably find a top 100 list for two draft cycles out the day of the 2023 draft. You know,
that doesn't mean it's good.
No, it doesn't. Like, I mean,
and, you know, has any value at all, but you know,
but I think like a perfect example happened in this cycle with like a Caleb Bonmer. Is that how I say the right name? Michigan guy. Did I say that correctly? Yes. He was not a guy. I know he was obviously on your radar because you cover Michigan high school baseball. You're up in that area. He wasn't on the national radar, and he came out, had an incredible national, I think was kind of up and down throughout the summer, but like his highs were really high. And the feedback throughout the industry was very mixed. And it was funny because I felt like you had some that were maybe had less of a track record with him, or the track record that they had wasn't all that impressive. It could be like what event they saw this guy at. And then other people could have seen national or, you know, I think was it area codes that he went off. I know he had a couple he went off. And the feedback from people who saw him at those events was completely different, where it was like, he's a top 10 player in the class, where other people were like, no, I think he's more like top 30, top 40, where it was like very different, like dichotomy in terms of how those players are viewed. And the best thing for Caleb Bonmer was the fact that he was promoted on Twitter and ranked by some people highly in lists and discussed highly, because all of a sudden people like myself, who, especially with the prep side of things, I cover more college baseball on the amateur side and mostly pro stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden he's in my circle, that like I'm aware of who this guy is, and that sets expectations going forward. And, you know, if it's even earlier and I start to learn about players that are 15, 16 years old, because those cycles get written about more frequently and covered in greater detail, and there's more seemingly ordered rankings, et cetera. That put different expectations on those players at a very early age when so much changes. And I think we see it with the international market too. You know, it's not always the guys that sign for $2 million that even make it to double A, right? There's a lot of guys that sign for a lot of big money that you don't hear about for 7 years. And you go, remember that guy signed for $3 million with the Yankees out of the Dominican Republic? You know, but there's some guy who signed for $100,000 that ends up being a superstar. Like, so, you know, and there's so much that changes at that point too, that it's just really hard for anybody to have any like certainty on this stuff. And it certainly feels like,
and that speaks to worse. That's fool's errand that is trying to evaluate 13-year-olds. That's all. That's the only thing I can say.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I also think that like the idea of like a 20. Did we lose Brian again?
No, I think he's back.
I'm good.
No, you got to. Right. Yeah. You're good. No, what I was saying is like I think the idea of a 2025 draft list for high school guys is just absolutely ridiculous. Because like if you think about it, and I'm gonna pull it up here in a second, the 15U national team. I'm gonna pull up the 2014-15 U national team, and you guys can just get like an idea for the people listening of just like, hey, like, these are what the top players looked like at that point, and now because this is, you know, almost 10 years old, this roster, like you can see what they became and what happened because of it. And I think it's a pretty good illustration of what happens with the quote elite 15U player, you know, as they go on that pool of elite 15U players, they go in two completely different directions. There's kids that become prospects, and then there's kids that, you know, they don't even make it at their college commitment. So, Jeff, do you want to see if we can get Brian back here? Brian, can you hear us?
Yeah, I had him drop video.
Yeah, I got told him to drop the video.
Yeah, I don't even know if the video was it. Yeah, and I think Bonmer is a really interesting case, right? Because that's a guy who had, you know, opportunities from the start of the summer, and he was at all of the big events during the showcase summer. So to some extent, he was seen enough to get invitations to all of the big events where he could go and prove himself, right? But you go back a summer, and I call this is like the equivalent of blowing up the Death Star, where you got to like, you got to hit it just right, and Walker Martin hit it just right.
Yeah.
Right? Like nobody really knew who Walker Martin was. And I think the one big event he was at was, I think he was at PG National?
Yeah. Yep.
He's at PG National. He got a couple looks there, and then he goes to Area Code, and that was like the first opportunity and only opportunity people really got to see him compete multiple times, I guess, in that showcase setting. Day over day, he had a home run. He showed really well. And then he signed for $3 million in the draft this year. And that's blowing up the Death Star, because he came into the exposure funnel very late. He didn't have the benefit of being, you know, PDP league or, you know, 18U trials, which, you know, I know for the scouting community is huge from just watching these guys compete. He wasn't at any of the other All-American games or anything like that. So, and then conversely, you know, you've got a number of other players that, you know, you may or may not hear of that dance in the shadows of these big events, or maybe at one and they don't perform, that go to college and then they become a guy, right? So, like, a guy I like is Avery Ortiz. Like, he went to Area Code. He did not blow up the Death Star. You know what I mean? He booted a couple balls on the infield. He didn't look particularly great. Now he's at Oklahoma State. I'm still a believer in that player, but he didn't have the opportunities that a lot of these guys have, where they could be at 4, 5, 6 big events in the summer. And if you have one bad one, that's okay, because you've got the next one to go show that you're not that guy. And then just kind of going back to the topic of the, you know, super early high school draft lists, I think that's a ridiculous idea. And, you know, I'll kind of speak to my time at USA Baseball here, because that's where, like, the whole idea of the exposure funnel really started, was, you know, a guy who performs at the 12U event and for the 12U national team, like, you know, he gets a little star next to his name as he kind of goes up the ladder, right? And let's look at, like, what a sampling of elite 15U players looks like. And that's really what you're ranking when you're talking about 2-3 years out, you know, looking at a super early draft board for high school players, right? So just looking at history, and this is a 15U national team that I think did really well. But this is 2014, and some of these guys are big leaguers, and some of these guys were drafted really high, and some of these guys you've never heard of before. And I think it's a really good microcosm of what looking at an air quote elite sample of 15U baseball players is in any given year. So you've got a team that has Hunter Green, Royce Lewis, Bryce Terang, just to name a few. You had some famous names at that time, like Alex Terrell. That name rings a bell.
Still the best underclass high school batting practice I've ever seen in my life belongs to Alejandro Terrell. Yeah. 2015 junior national, whatever the hell it was. Dude, we were at JetBlue, and my man was, I mean, pull side at JetBlue is not, you know, it's the Red Sox replica or whatever, right? Yeah. It's not a short park. And he's going pull side with backspin like no problem, and then hitting two irons over the monster, Oppo. And I was like, yeah, all right, great. Adrian Gonzalez, good. Let's move on to the next guy.
Exactly. And that's what you're seeing at 15. And then, you know, kind of going back to, like, the expectation, right, that we talked about with the high school quarterback. Like, that dude gets to the draft, and the expectation's first rounder. And if it's first rounder, if it's not first round, I'm going to Miami. Yep. And he goes to Miami, and then, you know, the balloon continues to deflate. It's like the birthday balloon. It's 2 weeks past your birthday, and this thing's, you know, it's sagging a little bit, right? And,
like, no one cares, you know, anymore. Yeah.
And then, honestly, like, COVID hits, draft shortens, minor leagues are condensing, and now there's not a place in affiliated ball for him. He's playing indie ball right now. That dude hasn't taken an at bat in affiliated professional baseball. Yeah. Right. And that was a huge name. Right. Yep. And then you've got other guys on here, and I know I mentioned it earlier, like Thomas Burbank, like left-handed pitcher, committed to Texas. Like, I think he went to Texas. He didn't pitch. He bounced back to Rice. I don't know if he pitched a whole lot there, maybe a little bit, but, like, that's part of what you're dealing with when you're ranking 15 new players is, you know, there's other names on here, like John Dirth, Jacob Blass. Right.
Sometimes the projection just does not hit.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, when you're looking at 15, 14, 16 year old kids, it's like there's two evaluative schools of thought, right? There's like best players right now and guys I think are the best prospects. And sometimes that's blended, sometimes it's not. Sometimes people do a little too much of one, not enough of the other, blah, 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 blah. But like a guy like Burbank, or if I'm remembering right, was a gorgeous left-handed arm operation up to 85, 86 as a 15-year-old. It all looked great. So that's the like, oh yeah, this is a guy. I know he's not maybe one of the best players right now, but like this all works together so well. It's beautiful. It looks great. He's athletic. Like he throws strikes, everything. We're checking all kinds of boxes here. All he's got to do is keep his natural growth progression and he's going to be 90, 94. And then we'll take him in the first round. Like, you know, it's really easy to just see that path for guys like that. And sometimes it does not happen. And like, that's the, but again, it speaks to like, it doesn't happen. No one can pinpoint the guys it's going to happen or not happen to. So what are we doing trying our best to rank out draft guys at that age anyways? But, you know,
but
it's going to your back point. It's all to your point. Yeah.
Right. Going back to what we said before, let's take this sample of 20, 25 players, whatever this is, from the 15-year national team. And in any given year, those players, like, they've got, you know, a little bit of prestige to their name, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, this is the roster of guys that for the next two or three years after that, you know, 16U level, 17U level, and then the junior summer going into their senior year, the draft cycle, right? Like, these are the guys that are invited to every event off of the prestige of their name because they were part of that 15U national team, mm-hmm. right? So, like, now, you know, Blake Powell, who's an infielder from Arizona, like, he's getting the invite to PDP League over Walker Martin, right? In that given year. Or if he's there alongside Caleb Bonnemer, who's a little bit ahead of Walker Martin in the exposure funnel, but he's not quite Blake Powell because he didn't play for the 15U national team. Those two guys are being evaluated at the 18U event of like, okay, Blake Powell needs to prove me wrong and prove that he can't do it. And Caleb Bonnemer needs to do everything right to prove that he's better than the guy that I've already won gold with.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with any of this. It's just human bias.
Yeah.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with liking the guy that you've won with in the past. But
you guys couldn't have brought up a more perfect example of, like, you talked about the bias of like, well, I've seen this guy perform, I'm going to like him. Caleb Bonnemer is that example for me. I saw that kid at 14. He raked right away. I've never seen him do anything other than rake. I'm never not going to be biased now with that. Yeah. He would have to go 0 for the spring for me to be like, I don't know. He probably can't hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and that we're establishing that that's a natural process of the evaluation when it comes to bias and all that. But like, that is the example for me in this class, that kid for sure.
Well, the tricky one for me was James Wood.
Oh,
and see, I saw James Wood in the summer, East Coast Pro. And I'm like, this dude's bat's electric. This guy can really
crazy.
Like, he knows the zone, bat to ball skills, bat speed, the whole nine. I'm like, this guy's in control when he's in the box. And I didn't see him at all in the spring at IMG. I just heard it was really bad. So like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, my memory of James Wood is that this is one of the top hitters in the entire class. And, you know, everything I'm hearing is that this guy couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat during his spring. And I'm just like, well, I didn't see that. So like, my bias continued to be that I like James Wood.
Right.
And
he was the best player on the planet for a month that summer. He was the best player on the planet for a month. Yeah.
It looked like, you know, he was an easy top 20 guy. And then somebody that like the industry tried to talk you off of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. There's always like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's interesting too. Like, just the natural bias of players that perform in front of you. Like, my examples are more collegiate based in the Cape Cod League. You know, somebody like Tommy Troy raked for me with Wareham, you know, came back with Kituit, first game hits like a walk-off home run, you know, coming from the College World Series or whatever in 2022. And Matt Shaw's hitting. I don't know a ton about Matt Shaw. I had seen Matt Shaw with like Worcester, you know, playing in the 2020 Futures League. So like, I'm like, he's a local guy. Like, he plays at Maryland. He's fine. By the end of that summer, though, it was like I had enough of a sample to be like, all right, like, I think like Shaw's probably the better guy here, you know? And that slowly like has been, I've been convinced of that, but like, it took me a long time to believe that. And I think like you're dug in too, when it's your guy. And that's natural, not just for people in the public space, but behind the scenes as well. We're all human, as Matt's kind of alluded to. It's just human nature. You know, I think we see it with general discussions about baseball at all levels, right? I don't think it's necessarily unique to this. It's just, you know, once you're in the big leagues, for the most part, you've had your opportunities. There's no, there's no concerns there, or pro ball in general too, right? You know, the things start to get a little bit more even at that point.
And like, you also never know like what a guy's going through at a given time, or if he's like tinkering with something or whatever it might be, right? Like, you know, to your point on, you know, performing in front of you on the Cape, like if you were there when Brendan Donovan was there playing for Hyannis, he hit 138 that summer, right? I don't think there's a single person who saw Brendan Donovan that summer in Hyannis that was like, oh, I really like this guy. He's going to be one of the best hitters in baseball, bat to ball skills, right? Like, it's just not the case, you know? So I don't know. I think that's where it's, I think like the whole gist of this conversation is just like understanding, or at least having that perception of like, okay, if there's a player that I'm seeing here for the first time and he doesn't perform, that doesn't mean like he can't perform. I have to like appreciate the fact that like I'm only seeing this guy in a small sample, whereas I've seen these other guys in a much larger sample. And you almost have to like find a way to like weight that and factor that into your evaluation of like, yeah, maybe I'm not seeing the whole picture on this guy, but I know for a fact I've seen the whole picture on this guy because I've seen him for 4 years at all the big events against all the best players.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, I'll say the last thing too, is I think that the funny thing is, as it goes down the funnel, like all of those awards, all of those teams you make, like that follows you down the funnel to a certain point. Right. And I know it's like a point you made right at the beginning of the show where, you know, the first thing you're going to do when you sit down and you have a list of names is circle all the guys that already won gold or already played for these teams or had already performed or, you know, already have a certain level of helium, whatever it might be, depending upon the event or, you know, what you're evaluating the player for. But that stuff kind of like follows players that, you know, even as they get into pro ball, it's like still like you're bringing up stuff that happened when a guy was 16, 17 years old, when they're 23 years old, you know. They kind of don't shake that until like 24, 25, and it starts to become blatantly obvious that it's not going to work out, or, you know, or it's just not the player that you thought it was. It's just, it's funny how that awards and accolades kind of do follow you as well. And it's not necessarily like we just forget about it once somebody gets into the pro level, you know?
It feels like we just, as a collective, don't do a good enough job understanding that there are massive differences between every age at every stop of the way. Like there, you know, like we talked about a couple of them earlier, the big difference between 13 and 14, for example, is they have to play with real bats. They have to play in real fields. No, you know, no one's hitting the ball 107 and 426 feet at 12 years old or anymore or whatever, because we're playing with real bats. But I think that like understanding that, like, expecting continuity out of a player's developmental path when he's a teenager, or expecting development to be linear in general, or not giving enough credit to the fact that between each summer, there is a massive difference. And we don't talk about that enough. Like 15 to 16, man, massive difference. You have no idea how much those kids' bodies change. Same thing from 16 to 17, same thing from 17 to 18. You could probably make the argument of what, 21 to 23 is a pretty substantial physical difference. All the way down the line, every year, there's that significant difference. And like, you know, it's unfair of us to expect the best players at 14 or 15 to maintain their physical developmental trajectories with every single other player in the world of the same age group. And that's why, you know, like we're talking about, that's why the best players at 14 are never the best players at 18. And we just don't, you know, like there is such a huge difference most of the time. Every time you see a player, if you only see him in the summer, there's a massive difference every single time you're going to see him. And that it's, I don't know if that's talked about enough. We talk about it in small bursts, you know, like middle school to high school or high school to college or whatever, but not in the incremental every year where it is substantial.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. The human body is I mean, it's the ultimate variable, right?
Yeah.
And like to your point, and I think that's kind of like to swing this in a different direction, and we won't get too far off track, but like NCAA changing the recruiting rules so you can't commit these kids at, you know, 15 or 16 years old, or what is it, 14 or 15 now? Like,
you can't, you have to,
but you can commit them at 16.
August of their junior year. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Basically like fall of their junior year, 16, 17 years old. Like, okay, now we're getting a little bit further down the road, right? So like a player that you know, because he's from up in your part of the world, Luke Leto, mm-hmm. right? Like Luke Leto is a dude who was 14, 15 year national team, LSU commit at 14. Like, and everyone's like, oh, what happened to Luke Leto? You know, because he was at all the big events that showcase summer, and they're like, you know, we heard so many good things about this guy, whatever. And it's like, maybe it's not what happened to Luke Leto, and it's what happened to everybody else. They all just caught up. You know what I mean?
He was the best 14-year-old I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the, anyways, that was a great example for that reason. But yeah, right. So I think everybody just caught up.
And that's very unfortunate for the kid, because he's the best 14-year-old you've ever seen. LSU commits him, and then he sits there. And you can even make the same argument for Ian Mahler, even though Ian Mahler did get into pro ball. Like, mm-hmm. These guys aren't who they were ranked as when they were 14 or 15 years old. And I think mentally that can kind of hold you back a little bit, because I think that gets you in your head like, okay, I don't need to work as hard as everybody else because I'm already the best and I'm more talented and this, that, whatever. And the reality is like there's this tidal wave coming, and it's called puberty. And the 80% of the kids that are your age that are behind you in puberty are going to catch up, and then we're going to see who can play. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and Leto at this point, what lasted 13 games at LSU, was in the portal, now at Kansas, had a pretty bad season, frankly, at Kansas, over 41 games, and, you know, is playing in the Appy League for summer ball, right? Like, it's not even like he's getting into the Northwoods League. And he's a Midwesterner from that area. They usually always take those Midwestern kids, right?
He's from Kalamazoo, bro. He's a shortstop from Kalamazoo. He was getting that Jeter comp this whole way up.
That's true. It's true. I mean, and I can remember there was a guy that was in one of my fantasy leagues that was not into prep ball or prospects at all, that was from Michigan, that knew about Luke Leto and would ask me about him, you know, and it would be like, well, there's probably better players in the state of Michigan, actually.
I remember articles being written, the next Derek Jeter ?
Yeah.
Front page of the Detroit News, like, you know, like, and he, that's the thing is he was like that, you know, this dude was like, no jump, dunking a basketball with two hands at 14 and like throwing 92 and hitting balls 400 feet left-handed and running 6'5s at 6'1, you know, like not a short, small little guy at 6'1 and skinny, like that type of athletic, not the, he's already a ball of twitch or whatever type of athleticism. Mm-hmm. And like, he had some injuries. I'm not going to speculate on what they were specifically, because I don't believe I know, but like, he had some nagging things that didn't help and blah, 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 blah. But like, you know, it's, that happens all the time. The best guy at 14, the dude who you like, I remember talking to, and this would have been 4 or 5 recruiting coordinators ago at South Carolina, but he went to camp and the South Carolina RC called me, and yeah, he was 14 maybe. He goes, yeah, dude, we just offered 90%. I think he's Corey Seager. And it wasn't ridiculous to say that, you know, but of course it's ridiculous to say that about any 14-year-old, but like, that's what it was, that good, where you were like, oh shit, you know, puberty happens. And again, I think there were some mitigating factors there with some maybe injuries that might've sapped a little of the twitch but you know, yeah, that's,
it was kind of interesting because the guy who was also, I think he was in the same class, or at least they played on the same 15U national team together, Ryan Clifford,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Like, Ryan Clifford was also a big deal at that age, and Ryan Clifford ended up getting paid decently in the draft, and he's had some success in pro ball. The difference between Clifford and Leto is that, you know, Clifford grew another 3 or 4 inches, and now he's like a hulking, like 6'3", 6'4", 200 something pounds, and Leto is literally the same body that he was when he was 14 or 15. So I think that's just another illustration of what we talked about, where like, hey, here's a sample of elite 15U players, and like, they go in wildly different directions.
Mm-hmm. And Leto's, this is the only reason I'm bringing this up is because the timeline fits, but Leto's, a lot of guys' first events out of COVID were PG National that summer, right? Like that was the first, we said, all right, what state is going to let us do this? Alabama? Dope. Nationals at the Met. So, and it was, we found out in a hurry who worked. You know what I mean? Like that was a probably as sort of fulcrum point and example as maybe we'll ever have of, we have no idea what's been going on with these kids for 3 or 4 months. Now, damn, PG National starting. Let's see. And we knew real damn quick, you know, who was working and who didn't. And we'll never have that again where like somebody has an excuse to not do anything for 4 months. But like it was eye-opening. You knew right away sometimes.
I felt like that was across the board at like every level.
Yeah.
That was an opportunity for people to improve their tools and skill sets and do some work at like a very base level that they never would have had an opportunity to do, right? Just in terms of like athleticism, some of those like breaking things down. You could rebuild, if you wanted to, you could rebuild your swing, you could rebuild mechanics, you could learn a new pitch and get proficient with it. There was enough time. And you really think about the amount of baseball time that was off for a majority of these guys, you know, outside of the PG National guys, there were a lot of, you know, there were a lot of players that took big jumps, I'm sure, that spring. I'd have to go back and look at the names. But guys that weren't getting exposure that all of a sudden came out and, you know, were able to do something with it, which I kind of think speaks to exactly what we're talking about with development and time spent and putting in the work and, you know, how big of a deal that can be, especially in this sport. You know, I always say it, I think, in every show and every different topic, but this is one sport where if you're a first round draft pick, pro experience, you know, big league experience is not handed to you. You know, you can be the worst pick in the NFL in the first round and you're going to play in NFL games. Yep. You can be DeMarcus Russell and still
start a quarterback.
Yeah, as long as you don't have anything off field, they'll keep calling you back 6, 7, 8 years later. I think Kayvon Austin just got a phone call. I saw on Twitter yesterday. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. But no, Jeff, I think that's a good place to throw a bookmark in this one.
Let's do it.
I think we actually did a pretty good job of staying on topic there and being as cohesive as possible. Shout out to Sack.
Apologies to your listeners for my Wi-Fi interruptions.
Don't worry. We're going to edit all that up. So no one will even
know. Oh, great.
It never
the magic happened. Of radio, baby. The magic
of
radio.
Yeah, roll it for Jeff.
Exactly. This stayed on topic because I talked a lot less. And with that being said, this has been the 90th percentile. For Brian Sikowski, follow him on Twitter. Where, Brian?
At @B_Sikowski_PG.
There we go. And Matt Pajak, this has been the 90th percentile. Thanks for tuning in.